She's the author of the upcoming book, The Clock Strikes Midnight, and that'll be coming in, I think, around November. Joan's an award-winning writer who has published 5 books and numerous stories. She has a doctorate in adult education, spent her professional life as a communications coach and a consultant. She's provided entertaining and educational workshops on everything from dealing with difficult people to how to hire the best talent. Her business books include titles as Managing Sticky Situations at Work and Hire Smart and Keep Them, published by Prager Press. And let us say, Joan, hi, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Oh, and thank you so much for being here. The clock strikes 12. You know, I wonder how many people, if they had the choice, that could stop for a moment, just take a look at the world around them, and then go back through their life and really take a look at what caused everything to be the way it is.
That would be an interesting question, yes. Yes, The Clock Strikes Midnight is sort of that way. It's a person who finds out she has very little time left in this world. And so she doesn't do what some of us would do, which might be, you know, take that bucket list and go down everything we haven't done and try to do it. Instead, she says, and she admits it early on, that she's not done a lot of good things in her life, and she wants to correct a number of those wrongs. And so the book is really a race against time in a quest for revenge and atonement. It's a story about hate, love, betrayal, and forgiveness.
Yeah, wouldn't it be interesting if everybody had that choice? You know, you stand here right now, or you're sitting down right now, and you think, if I was going to die at midnight, how different would it be? What would I want to change? What would I want to experience? And wouldn't it be great if you could do that anyway?
That is an interesting question. In fact, that's one of the things I thought about when I started the book that way, thinking, what is it I would do if I found out I only had a few hours left to live?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a scary thought.
Sure.
Most of us don't have that. You know, even if we're maybe dying, we usually, it's not, you know, boom, you're dead at midnight.
Sure.
So it's an interesting question, and I think people's answers, many of them, would be very different. With my character, she had so many hidden secrets that she had kept bottled up for so very, very long that as soon as she heard that she had very little time left, she knew exactly what she was going to do.
You know, interesting enough, you know, from a communication specialist to mystery writing, it's the same thing because communication is mystery, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh. you hit on something very, very interesting. That's very true. And when, as a writer, one of the things you find out when you're writing, one of the first questions you have to ask when you decide you want to write a story or a novel is, whose point of view do I use? Do I use my point of view coming from the I person, or do I use a third person coming from someone else? And if you use the I person, then you only know your point of view. Everything else is a mystery.
Sure.
Everything else is unknown. And even if you use the third person, it's coming from that person's point of view. I can't know, Michael, what you're thinking right now. Only you know that, and that's a mystery. And so I have found in communication and in my years as a communication coach, so much of the misunderstandings that happen at work, in relationships, are all that unknown, what the other person hasn't told us or maybe tried to tell us and we didn't hear. So that connection that you just made is very interesting.
Yeah, because, Joan, when you come down to it, that when we speak to ourselves, I mean, years ago I realized when I stopped talking to myself and realized that the other person thought differently than I did, whether it be one person or 10 million, all of a sudden everything seemed to turn around. Mystery. You know, there are people who have a handle on this, and I'll give you a great example of this. The Nutrisystem weight loss commercial. They capture everybody. You got the left-hand side of the screen, you got a woman about 100 pounds overweight, very depressed, solemn look on her face. Right-hand side of the screen, you got the same woman. She's lost all the extra weight. Life is good. Big smile. It is in that split second in time with that recognition of the possibility of a solution. That's when, quote-unquote, the buying response is triggered. because when you set that, it's Nutrisystem. Somebody asked me once, how do you, you know, there's so many different people with so many different values. How do you get to everybody at the same time for what everybody, you know, how everybody sees it? See, Nutrisystem does it. Their weight loss. Notice we didn't say it was a solution to their weight loss. It was the solution, the possible solution for the job they couldn't apply for, the relationship they were afraid to get into, the athletic event they couldn't participate in, and the list goes on and on. If you frame it in a certain way, everybody puts their own definition on it, and you've got an entire audience.
There you go. And that was a very clever ad, because that's what it did. It tapped the innermost desires that people have and helped them find out what those desires are and attach it then to Nutrisystem.
Sure. That's really what it is. Okay, let's go back to the mystery. It's the same thing.
The mystery.
It's the same thing.
Yes.
All of a sudden, what are we looking for with a mystery? We're looking for an end result, an answer, right? And then there's Nutrisystem. You got the mystery. Then all of a sudden, you see the answer. But 1,000 people watch that ad, and 1,000 people get their own particular answer.
So many people have told me, when I've told them that I've written a mystery, I've heard so many people say, oh, I love mysteries. I mean, I think there's something in all of us that like mysteries, because there's something we don't know, and somehow in a mystery it gets resolved. And so, and also I think the challenge of figuring it out or trying to figure it out as you're reading. So I think that there's something to the fact that a lot of us enjoy mystery and are stimulated by it.
Sure. And then again, too, you got to get the bad guy. How do you create the bad guy?
You got to get... Right. The villains, this is interesting, because I just read a book. I won't say anything about it other than I read a book, because I do not want to mention the book or the author, because I hated it. And so it's probably not a good idea.
Good reason.
But it's an example of a really bad hero, or not a hero, I'm sorry, a really bad villain. The villain was so horrible that I didn't even want to be in his mind for any length of time. And not only was it that bad, and I know there are a lot of writers who write really, really bad villains and they get away with it, but at the end of this book, that villain was not actually captured. I mean, he still existed, and I thought, darn, you can at least kill him off if he's that bad. But the author didn't do it. And there's a trick to creating villains. And they need to be bad, but they also need to be not that bad. There needs to be something human in them as well. So you make them not so, so very terrible that people don't want to even have anything to do with them. You give them some degree of humanity, because otherwise, your characters are cardboard. They need to be a little bit good, a little bit bad, a little bit flawed, and yet not totally flawed.
No.
See what I'm saying?
Sure. They have to have a recognizable something about them that your reader or your listener or your watcher is going to recognize and react to.
That's right. That's right. Otherwise, they can't relate to your characters, and that's a very dangerous thing. You want to have characters that ring true to your reader.
No, absolutely. No question about it. It's the same thing in a verbal story. It's the same thing if you're watching a movie. For that moment in time,
right. They're
not doing it. You are. You're reacting and you're responding with them.
That's right. That's right. So I think that that's something that we struggle with when we're not only the villain and how to create the villain in a way that he is indeed a villain, but at the same time, he's not totally disreputable. There's something human about him that your readers can relate to. You also have to do that with your protagonists. They need to be not just sugary sweet and you know, wonderful and smart and intelligent and all this. They need to also have some humanity. Otherwise, again, it's not believable.
Now, when you really come down to it, you know, you've written 4 business books, you move into this. Is there anything different between a business book and writing this kind of fiction?
Oh, my Lord. Yes, very different. The business books, and I enjoyed writing the business books, and they were very helpful for me in my career. But they were very different kinds of writing. It was a lot of research goes into them, and also you can't kill off a character if you don't like them, which you can do in fiction, or change the reality of something. If you're writing from research and the research says X, you can't change that when you're writing in business books or when you're writing nonfiction. With fiction, you have much more freedom. You can have characters do things that, if you don't like it the way it works out, you change what they do. If you don't like a person in the book, you get rid of them. If you don't like a scene, you take it out. There's so much more opportunity for creativity, and that's one of the things I really enjoyed about writing fiction versus nonfiction.
But if you look at business, business has got the bad guy. Business has got the good guy.
Yeah.
Business has got, all of those things you just talked about fiction, business has, even if it's stats.
That's right.
It's how you use those stats that's going to make or break you.
You're absolutely right. I think, too, when I wrote the book Managing Sticky Situations at Work, it's full of all kinds of cases about dealing with difficult bosses and dealing with difficult coworkers and so on. And all of those are situations very similar to what I write when I write fiction and stories, and even had dialogue where the boss would say this to the person and the person would say this back. So there was a lot of carryover from one to the other, and I think there's no question there's opportunity for stories, fictional stories, to come out of the business world.
Now, by the way,
we see that all over the place.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
On a personal level, your background in sociology, your husband's a psychiatrist, the backgrounds,
yes.
How did they blend together to help you do what you're doing?
The fact that I'm a sociologist, my husband's a psychiatrist, how do they blend together? I think the key is as a sociologist, I'm very interested in people and how people relate to each other. Well, clearly my husband has taught me a lot about that as far as his psychiatric experience goes. And I have written the book I'm working on now, which is my work in progress. The killer in the book is a sociopath, a clear sociopath. And I wouldn't really understand and know what a sociopath was had it not been for the years that I've lived with my husband. Not that he's a sociopath,
right.
But I'm clear on that. But he taught me what it meant and what it is. And so I think my own interest in people and relationships, which comes from sociology, as well as my husband's tremendous knowledge in the individual, I guess, pathology, mental pathology, has certainly helped. Also, specifically in The Clock Strikes Midnight, one of the characters actually goes into a mental hospital. And that was something that I wrote and then had my husband read to make sure that I was accurate in what that experience would be like.
Yeah, Joan, we're just about out of time now. And by the way, I could talk to you about this all night long. I have this mental picture, of you and your husband. You walk in, he's sitting down at the dinner table, and you say to him, "I don't know anybody who does that." And he looks at you and says, "And how long has this been bothering you?"
And then I've learned to answer that with a question. You know, you answer every question with a question.
Absolutely. Okay, website we can find you at.
You can find me at my website, which is www.joancurtis.com. My book comes out on November 25th, and you can get the first two chapters free on my website, and you can find out more about The Clock Strikes Midnight there.
Wonderful. Joan Curtis, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Michael. This was great. I enjoyed it.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Such teeth, dear.